Luke. Luke. Ben? You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Podcast? There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 188, The Empire Strikes Back, Act 1. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Lando Calrissian to my Lobot, we have Carl LeClaire. You're just so much smoother than I am.
Well, and you are, I don't know if you're that quiet, but...
No, I'm not that quiet, but you're so much more smooth than I am.
I don't know about that. I kind of like. I have a strong love for Lobot, you know, and
which is why I'm Lobot, because that way you love me.
Exactly. with obviously the new Battlefront DLC out with the Bespin level, or the Cloud City level for that matter. Have you played it, Jason? Because you did do the season pass, right?
I did do the season pass. I do have it. I played it a little bit.
Okay.
I haven't had a lot of Battlefront time, but I played it a little bit.
Well, I didn't do the season pass because I didn't really want to spend the price of a game to play a couple extra levels. And I looked at the Outer Rim stuff, wasn't impressed. I was like, okay, no reason to buy it. But I was like, okay, if I'm going to buy it, Bespin will, you know, do it. And I watched a lot of gameplay, still don't think I want to buy it. I think what would have made all the difference in the world was being able to play as Lobot and being able to see the torture chamber. Whoops. but no, the Carbonite Chamber looked cool. I mean, it looks great, but I just, the fact that there's a new game coming out next year, I just don't want to spend the money. Although I did hear you can buy, I think in July, I don't know what the exact date is, but they're talking about how you will be able to buy just, Cloud City or Bespin, on its own. So I'll look into how much that is. If it's reasonable, I might do that.
Okay.
But cool. Yeah, I haven't played Battlefront in a lot lately though. So, have you?
I got, on Tuesday, I got the Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens, so that's all I've been playing this week. Not that I haven't had a lot of time, but I got the, you know, but I've been playing that, so.
Do you like it?
I do, but I've always liked the Lego Star Wars games, so the first level to sort of, like, get you introduced to the controls and everything is, you know, the end battle of Return of the Jedi. So that's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it jumps you into the story, and most of the cutscenes is dialogue straight out of the movies. But at least with so far as how where I've gotten, you've got Rey and Finn, and it sounds like you've got Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, you know, adding extra dialogue for the characters, you know, while you're running around and stuff. So. Cool.
Yeah, which I think they did sign on to help with. They were both excited to do it, which doesn't surprise me. I highly doubt Harrison Ford would have signed on for that game.
Exactly, exactly. Like I said, you know, I've only just gotten to where we meet Han, where we're on his ship and the Rathtars are about to get out. And we're telling it to Kanja Club right now. So
tell that to Kanja Club.
Oh, I love that line.
Man, I downloaded the free demo for it, and I wasn't that taken with it. So again, haven't bought it.
Gotcha.
I'll wait till it's been out for like a little. That's the thing that's crazy. I was in like a GameStop the other week, and I was just looking around at games that are even just like 6 months old. It's ridiculous how much cheaper things get when you just give it like a half a year to a year.
Right.
So
yeah, no, totally. That's what I'm waiting for Street Fighter to do, because I've got a friend who plays Street Fighter a lot, and I want to play with him. But it's too much for me to buy right now.
Yeah, new games are not cheap. But anyway, we've got off onto a very long video game tangent before we did anything.
Exactly.
So
I don't know how we got there.
We have a before we get into our episode, which we did not get an act. I don't think we did an episode in June for Act One of Empire Strikes Back. We were intending to, but things got hectic in both of our schedules. So we're kicking off July with Act One of The Empire Strikes Back, which we will get to shortly. But before we do, Jason, we had a pretty fun matchup given to us by Mark Herleman in our last episode, which, by the way, we got a lot of positive feedback to that episode, which was awesome to hear. And I lay all that credit at the feet of Mark Herleman because I was like, this is episode 188. I can say there's probably maybe a dozen episodes we've recorded where I just wasn't feeling it. Like, I just either wasn't in the mood or my mind was really occupied while we were recording. This was one of those episodes for me. So if I seemed a little off, I apologize. It was just one of those episodes where I had a lot going on in my head, so I didn't feel like I brought my A game, but I didn't care because we had Mark. So <Yeah. laughs> I think he did such a great job of really breaking things down for us. It's awesome to hear that people enjoyed the episode so much.
I'm just impressed that, you know, even though we were completely all over the place with no real like train of thought throughout the entire episode, that people still loved it. So
yeah, maybe people want more streams of conscious episodes.
And that's all you get with Mark Herleman, folks, is streams of conscious.
Yeah, but they're pretty brilliant. So
we're really
glad to have had him on.
But the matchup that Mark gave us at the end of the episode was a three-way matchup between R2-D2, BB-8, and Chopper. So I'm going to go ahead and get us the Larian responses. Jeffrey Beaumont says R2-D2 always wins. Walter Onosenowitz, Chopper uses a gun and has killed people. Parentheses, stormtroopers are people too. Kyle Taylor, R2-D2. Joey Letson gives it to R2 due to his smarts. Dave Laidlaw, BB-8, because he seems to be the fastest. Greg Cass, BB-8. There's a lot more hidden in those hatches than we realize. Adam J. Taylor, R2-D2. Ian Statsny, R2-D2. Cody Murphy ultimately gives it to R2-D2 because he's a homicidal maniac. Travis Magruder, or excuse me, not R2-D2, Chopper, sorry. Cody Murphy gave it to Chopper because he's a homicidal maniac. R2's not a homicidal maniac. Travis Magruder gives it to R2-D2. Jeffrey Fishbach, R2. And then on Twitter, we got several responses. I think this is the most responses on Twitter we've gotten in a matchup in a long time. Bobby at Bobby R. Gordon gives it to Chopper. At Balls in Play, R2-D2. At Dewey the Mailman, Chopper, hands down. He's a scary friend. At King Og 9 Cubits, gives it to the Death Commando known as Chopper. At Bradley W. Hall, gives it to, R2-D2. At Jedi Jack, says that it's just going to be a tie. At Real Darth Cadus, says Proxy from the Force Unleashed games joins the fight and he wins. And then at Damian Kreese 1, gives it to BB-8. So that gives us a final Larian tally of one tie, one for Proxy, three for BB-8, five for Chopper, and nine for R2-D2. What say you, Carl?
R2-D2. I don't have much to say on this because I prefer BB-8 and then Chopper and then R2. R2 is my least favorite of these droids, which I know is like basically a heretical statement. And Jason...
Yes, it is.
if we weren't factoring in what R2 was in the prequels... it would make for a more interesting matchup. It would also make me love R2 more. But considering we have to factor in the prequels, and that's not saying because I don't like the prequels. I like the prequels. I just don't like how R2 is basically Inspector Gadget, specifically in episodes 2 and 3.
I love Inspector Gadget R2.
Well, that's why he wins this hands down. We don't see BB-8 or Chopper do anything quite as incredible as R2. So R2 definitely takes the victory here. But BB-8 wins for adorableness.
So. Well, if this is a contest of adorableness, then yes, BB-8 hands down. You know, Chopper is too foul mouthed to even qualify for that contest.
Although R2 is extremely foul mouthed too.
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, BB-8. He's just kind of like a curious pet. He's like, "What's this? What's this? What's that? What's this?"
Exactly.
But in this
matchup, duel to the death sort of thing. Although not death, because you can put a droid back together and reactivate them.
Right.
I'm also going to go with R2-D2. I mean, big surprise there. but basically, the droid has survived, you know, in addition to, you know, being smart and being able to take down super battle droids and, you know, all that fun stuff. The droid has survived just about everything that the galaxy has thrown at him. I mean, basically, he got shot by a TIE fighter and still walked away from it. So you kind of have to give it to R2, in my opinion. So that gives us a final tally of 11 for R2, 5 for Chopper, 3 for BB-8, 1 tie, and 1 vote for Proxy. So,
Jason, I'm sorry. I just got distracted with the card trader. Everybody, I've had an iPhone 4 for like 3 years, and it sucks. You can't do anything on it. I never even updated the thing because I just knew it would crash. So I finally got an iPhone 6 yesterday, and Jason was like, "Ooh, you can get the Card Trader app," which I foolishly downloaded right before we started recording. My apologies. Yeah. I just put it away. I promise. I'm ready to talk Empire. But I was so excited. Jason's like, "Ooh," he just said it so casually too. He's like, "Ooh, now you can get the Card Trader app." And I kind of just like crapped a brick. So with excitement. So
I have never heard that expression before.
Well, and I know everybody who's listening right now is like, dude, that app is like a year old. Get with it. But I don't care. I had an iPhone 4. It's time for me to have some fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jason, we do have a fun poll for the end of the episode. At least I'm saying we do. And it's basically coming out of the first few episodes of Tales of the Larians. So, because I want to ask the community at large this question. So. But you have to stick around to the end to hear what it is.
Exactly. But before we get there, we have a topic. We are going to go through Act 1 of The Empire Strikes Back. You know, nobody here on this show likes this movie, so I don't know why we're talking about it.
You know what's funny, Jason? Act 1 of Empire is my least favorite part of the movie, though.
Really?
Act 1 is my least... Yeah, I prefer Act 2, even though it's slow, to Act 1. Even though it has the Battle of Hoth. I mean, I love, obviously, the Yoda elements and even the Han and Leia stuff. I don't know. I don't know why it is. Whenever I watch Empire, Act 1 always just moves so slowly for me. And again, that's not to knock it and say I don't like it. But I think, so we're almost done doing Act 1s of the films, right?
We've got Empire, then we have Revenge of the Sith and Return of the Jedi after this.
That's right. I think... Act 1 of Empire, though, is probably my least favorite first act.
Really?
I think so. Yeah, I even think I prefer Attack of the Clones Act 1, which is saying a lot, I realize. But I think the strongest Act 1 for me is Phantom Menace. I love Act 1 of Phantom Menace.
It's a good one.
It really is. But anyway, I'm sorry. Shall we begin?
We shall.
So it starts with an opening crawl, like every Star Wars movie.
Right.
But I think it's worth...
I'm just waiting for one of these TIE fighters to just, you know, hit these crawls going through space and crash, you know.
Well, I think the one thing worth mentioning, though, about the opening crawl in Empire, again, is the fact that it uses the word obsessed. Vader's obsessed with finding Skywalker. So we can imply, obviously... Because, you know, A New Hope to Empire is a 3-year time gap, and the comics are beating us over the head with this particular time gap right now. Every single comic is focused in that era. I'm not crazy about them. I did finally just read the first Han Solo comic. I liked it, and I didn't like it.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Okay, well, I won't say any details on it. I liked it just because it was a fun comic. It was a really good comic, and it's a fun Han Solo comic, and as a Han Solo fan, I appreciated it. But I don't like it because of what it does to the saga. And I won't go into detail about that since you haven't read it.
Okay.
But again, I think this is... I'm getting a little off topic right to start, and I'm sorry. But I feel like, you know, obviously with The Force Awakens, a lot of the... I'm going to just call it EU because that's essentially what it is. I mean, it's canon EU now. It's new canon EU. But our new canon EU, like specifically the comics... and even some of the novels that are filling in this time gap, it's almost as if they're trying to reconcile some of the changes we've seen in the characters, the big three specifically, in The Force Awakens, most notably Han. You know, I think there's stories that are being told about him now that I would have never suspected before. And what I mean by that is when we get to Empire, to me, Han never left. Han has been with the Rebellion for those 3 years. You know, he's been with them through everything. But we're getting this new EU that kind of shows, well, no, he's still kind of off doing his own thing on the side. And I think that's to try to reconcile the fact that he was able to walk away so easily by the time we get to Force Awakens. I don't really like that. I think it's kind of screwing with the original mythology about the fact that Han's character changed at the end of A New Hope, and now he's thrown his lot in with the Rebellion. He's not full in it like Luke, but it seems like he's been with them for those 3 years. So, do you have anything to say to that?
I don't know. I mean, I could go either way, because we'll get later on in this first act. Han mentions that he has to go pay off Jabba the Hutt, or he's a dead man because of the bounty hunter on Ord Mantell and all that fun stuff. I mean, you could either take that as he ran into the bounty hunter during a rebel mission or one of the side missions. Maybe they're even, you know, the rebels are even using Han's skills as a smuggler, you know, to send him off on some of these missions. You know, it's one of those things where I think he's starting to use, you know, you could either even say he's kind of using the Rebel Alliance sort of a home base, but, you know, when there's downtime or things are getting hot, you know, Han may go off and do his own little thing to try and avoid some of the scrutiny. But by the time of Empire, you know, especially shortly after A New Hope, but, you know, 3 years later, by the time we get to Empire, I think he's pretty much entrenched with the Rebels at that point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll have to see how it goes. I have access to the Han Solo comics. I just haven't read them yet, so I'll have to see what I think about that when I read those. So.
Did the second one come out?
I think it did.
Okay, well, I've only read the first. So again, I
think it just came out.
Okay,
though, so.
I've really fallen out of the comics because, specifically the ones between episodes 4 and 5, because I've gotten really sick of the stories. But all that aside, we'll jump back to Empire now. I apologize for all the tangents already in the episode. but I did. The reason, I wanted to point out, obviously, you know, that in that opening crawl, it's implied that Vader knows that Luke is his son. And obviously at the end of that movie, it's pretty clear that Vader knows that. And he doesn't learn that during the film, so we must, you know, we have to imply that he knows that going into this.
Right.
Again, the comics have given us where that came from. Hashtag spoiler alert coming up. Boba Fett, of all people, is the one who finds out that Luke is Vader's son. That's stupid as hell, if you ask me, but that's what it is now in the new canon. So that's how Vader finds out. And sorry to be so flip if you love that. I mean, it's cool. To me, it's pandering, but so I don't really care for it. But be that as it may, Vader has found out who Luke is, and he is, as it says, obsessed with finding him. And that's really, if you think about it, that's kind of the MacGuffin of this film. You know, in A New Hope, it's these stolen Death Star plans. In Episode 5, it's a character. And again, I think that's neat, too, because, you know, I think a lot of folks that love Empire so much, and the reason it gets the high praise that it does as the best Star Wars film, you know, by critics and whatnot, is because it's such a character-driven film. And how interesting then that the MacGuffin is a character, you know? So Vader's after Luke. So we as, you know, we're following his tale as it goes on. So so I think that's really cool that right off the bat we're told that this character, this main character, is in danger. He's in the sights of the Dark Lord.
Right.
And
which is not good. And of course we get the probe droids that are out hunting Luke and the Rebellion, you know. But mainly Luke.
right. And, you know, an interesting first shot, you know, it's not nearly as exciting as the A New Hope opening shot, right? It's just a Star Destroyer just comes flying into the screen type of a thing. But it shows who's in control here, who's in control of this galaxy, and they're shooting out these probes. And the first character we meet is, of course, Luke.
Yes.
Who is riding a pretty sick Tauntaun. To me, favorite creature in Star Wars, I think. I know we did a top 5 creatures episode probably like 3 years ago. By the way, isn't that crazy that we can say 3 years ago?
Yeah, it is.
I love the Tauntaun, and you get that really, you know, it is dated. You can tell that stop animation is a bit dated when you watch that film now, but I still love it. Absolutely love it. And all the zoom in shots, that Tauntaun to me looks real. It looks more real than a CGI effect would even today, in my opinion. You know, when you're zoomed in and Luke's sitting on the Tauntaun, again, because your focus is mostly on the human character. So the Tauntaun in your periphery just looks like a real creature that he's riding.
Yeah, it's, well, it's a big puppet, basically, that he's sitting on. And but yeah, I like the Tauntaun. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, though. But of course, Luke runs into some trouble while he's out there, you know, checking out a meteorite and all that fun stuff. And of course, we're going to get to, you know, the genesis of our show here in a minute. But the next character we really run across, of course, is Han Solo, who is returning back to the Hoth Rebel base. And he immediately seems like he's just in a bad mood. Han does not want to be there anymore.
Right. Right.
You know, the Falcon's in disrepair. Chewie's grumpy and angry, and Han's tired of being cold.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I think, I love some of my favorite shots from the Act 1 are of Han, you know, riding the Tauntaun into Echo Base, that huge open cavern. And then, you know, just watching Han kind of walk through the Echo Base and stuff, and just seeing the mechanics and all the sounds. And Jason, do you remember when we went to that that panel at Celebration where David Collins, you know, put in the restored Empire Strikes Back music?
Yes.
And remember what a different scene that was with the music?
It was very different.
Yeah. I would say not as good. And that's, I mean, you and I both, like every Star Wars fan, we love John Williams and all the music he did. Again, like he composed almost wall-to-wall music for Empire. But there's something so good. And the majority of the music in Empire that was cut is in Act 1. And it's often, again, it's allowing for the sound to really take center stage. And I think when Han's walking through Echo Base, just, you know, the sounds of the torches and the wrenches and the tools, like, it just you immediately are like, yep, this is their base. This is a military base. And it just makes it feel so much more lived in.
It also helps to, you know, isolate the rebels. You know, the music being absent there also sort of gives this sort of a tense sense of isolation. Like, there's nothing else out here. You know, there's, you know. And, of course, when the Empire shows up, there's, you know, tons of music. So I don't know if that was, you know, deliberate in that respect, but, you know, at least that's part of the effect it gives when without the music, for the most part, is, at least for me, is that it gives this sort of a sense of isolation and closes everything in, you know.
Yeah, good point. But you're right, Han strolls in. He seems to be annoyed. He's in a bit of a hurry of some kind. Chewie's busy working on the ship. Where's my boyfriend? Chewie's working on the Falcon. I like that Wookiee.
I like that Wookiee.
Sorry. Chewie seems to be in a rush. Everything just feels rushed. And, you know, Han's going to stroll in and make it known to General Ryken that it's time for him to go. You know, things have obviously gotten tense for him. And you know, he hasn't, at least to me, again, if you're just watching the film, it seems like Han never went to pay off Jabba. Whether that's because he's been busy with them, or maybe they didn't give him enough money at the end of A New Hope to do it. But it's very clear that his past, right, it's returned to haunt him. You know, he hasn't handled his past life. So it's still kind of, you know, it's still pursuing him. So it's funny because here we have our two main male characters, in a sense, being pursued. Vader's after Luke, Jabba's still after Han, right?
Right.
So, and Han realizes, okay, it's time for me to go. And I like that little exchange. You know, Ryken, he's sad to see Han go. And I think that's what's really cool. It's kind of implied here that, you know, again, Han's debatably part of the Rebel Alliance. I don't know. I mean, he's obviously, you know, he's wearing the coat he's wearing, he even seems to have an insignia on it as if he holds rank with the army. again, it's never clear whether or not he is. And even though they refer to him as Captain Solo, I think that's because he's captain of the Millennium Falcon. I don't think it's because it's a rank in the military.
I would agree with that.
Okay. But, you know, it seems that, you know, the Alliance respects Han, probably because of his personality. He's, you know, he's witty. He's got a sense of humor. He probably works well with the other troops. But more than that, anything, you're a good fighter, Solo. I hate to lose you, right? Like, Han is. He's good with a gun, and he's good in a ship. You know, mm-hmm. and the Rebels can use anybody they can, but, you know, it's also, there's also that freedom to leave. You know, like, that's a huge difference. If he was in some way contracted with the Empire, he wouldn't have that freedom to just up and leave. You know, Riken doesn't want him to go, but understands that that's what he's going to do, because he's got a death mark. So, you know, it's time to go deal with that death mark. And then he has that, you know, then he's got to swindle on over to Leia.
Yeah, yeah, and she's not happy with him at all. You know, obviously when he says goodbye, you know, she's, you know, gives off this air of, you know, I thought you decided to stay, you know, and we need you. And Han sees beneath the surface of just, you know, the Rebels need him. And Leia is trying to deny that to his face, basically, that, you know, no, it's not about me. It's about the cause. You know, which, knowing Leia, is probably largely true, but, you know, there's that underlying hint of romance, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly that tension, and, you know, and then there is this really, you know, incredible scene between these two. They're arguing, and, you know, Leia's making this all about the cause, because that's Leia, right? Like, we mm-hmm. need you here. You're a great leader. You know, this alliance needs you. Whereas Han's saying, nope, there's something more to this. You know, come on, tell me the real reason you want me to stay. And right.
I have to say, I would have loved to have been an extra on set that day and been the guy awkwardly having to go between the two of them in the middle of their argument. Because I don't know. That's funny. It must be the most awkward, you know, he's carrying this crate of something, you know, got to get it somewhere important. And all of a sudden, these two rebel leaders, you know, well-respected people in the Alliance, just arguing, shouting at each other in the hallway, and you've got to get past them. And just like, excuse me, don't mind me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even like when the... You know, he shouts back to her, you could use a good kiss. And that one trooper who's walking into a side door kind of glances back at her too, which is really funny.
Again, she stares at him.
This is the humor Irvin Kershner was able to work in. You mm-hmm. know, it's not like, it's not slapstick, but it's, you know, it's definitely going to make you chuckle.
But it's the darkest of the original trilogy movies, not to say it's dark
right.
per se. Because I've never thought of The Empire Strikes Back as a dark movie, to be perfectly honest. A dark movie is, you know, Revenge of the Sith. That's a dark movie. There's nothing happy in that one. But
sure there is. Mace Windu dies. Sorry. But apparently, yeah, I was just going to say, according to Samuel Jackson, Mace Windu's still alive. I'm sorry, but sorry, Sammy.
Pablo Hidalgo is not having any of it, though, apparently.
Oh, thank the Force.
You're right.
Anyway, though, you know, back to this banter between Han and Leia, you know, it's really clear that there is that tension between these two characters. And think of, you know, Han's a lot older than her, you know.
Right.
I mean, literally the actor and the actress are about 10 years apart. And I think that's meant to be the difference in the age between the characters as well. So mm-hmm. Han's been around a time or two. He gets it. And again, I actually love this scene in the radio drama. I don't know if you remember it, but there's a lot of lines about how he kind of, I think he refers to her as like the ice princess or the ice queen, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, he's you know, the only thing colder than this planet is you, or something like that, right? Like he's pointing out that she's just so obsessed with the cause that she forgets what it's like to be human, to have, you know, emotional feelings for somebody. I think this scene, it really sets that up, that there is this tension between them. And, you know, it almost makes me wonder, you know, if when Han says, you know, come on, you know, why do you really want me to stay? I wonder if she said, like, yes, it's because I have feelings for you, and I want to see where that goes. I wonder if that would have made him stay.
I don't know.
I don't either.
It may have made him, you know, take pause, at least. I don't know if it would make him stay or not, because he seems pretty determined to go at this point. But, you know, maybe one of those things like, well, I'll pay Job off and I'll come back, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, the implication here is I'm just going to leave. You'll never hear from me again. But if she'd spoken up, maybe he would have at least, you know, made that promise to return.
Then we go from one bickering couple to another. oh, man. We go from Han and Leia and all their drama, which, of course, we'll get much more into as the movie progresses. And we get this. I don't know why, but I just love this little scene of R2 and 3PO walking down the hallway, bickering at each other as on their way to deliver a message to Han Solo. Basically, you know, R2's accidentally turned up the heat in Princess Leia's room, causing it to melt and get all in her clothes, apparently, because 3PO mentioned that the room was freezing. But it's supposed to be freezing, you know. Oh, switch off! You know, I love it.
Yeah. Well, I love their theme music that we get there. You know, again,
yes.
David Collins points out that John Williams gives us a theme for R2 and 3PO during this scene. And if I'd had the forward thought to think we were going to mention that quickly, I'd pull it up, but alas, I did not think to do that. It is so funny. It's just, there's just all of our characters that we're meeting so far are bickering. Nobody's getting along really quite yet. Even when Han's talking to Chewie, they're bickering, right? Like, Chewie's complaining about something. Don't lose your temper. I'll come right back and give you a hand, right? Like, there is this, like, nobody's getting along right now.
And Han gets to the Falcon, and Chewie's taking something apart, and Han wants to leave, and they can't now, and, you know, why'd you take this apart now, you know?
Yeah.
And nobody's getting along. And I think that's because Luke's not there. Because Luke's sort of like the peacemaker.
Exactly. Okay, real quick, I found that piece of music. One sec.
Okay.
It's with the scene, though, so you're going to hear R2 and 3PO.
Hey, me. I didn't ask you to turn on the thermal heater. I merely commented that it was freezing in the princess's chamber. But it's supposed to be freezing. Are we going to dry out all her clothes? I really don't know. Oh, switch off.
Oh, switch off.
I love that.
But I love
it. I just, in imagining Princess Leia going back to her chambers and just seeing just puddles all over the floor and going, what happened here? Because the idea that I'm getting is that R2 and 3PO didn't tell her.
Right. Yeah. That's so funny. And I love that piece of music for them, because we do hear that throughout the rest of the film when they're together, which is great. Mm-hmm. Now Han's coming in, and he's all annoyed because it sounds like Chewie is taking the repairs to the next step, you know?
Which is, you know, take it apart, put it back together, see if it works.
Right.
and then, of course, 3PO walks up, and Han does not want to see Goldenrod. But 3PO has a very important message. Luke's not back. And nobody knows where he is. And
what do you mean nobody knows?
Yeah. Deck officer. Excuse me, sir. My title.
Do you know where Commander Skywalker is?
You might. No, sir. It's possibly came in through the south entrance.
It's possible. It's getting dark out there. Why don't you go and find out?
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, sir. What's going on? Why not?
Impossible, man.
but I think that's, you know, what's going to keep Han around? Luke, right?
Luke.
You know, I think even from the get-go, the reason Han sticks around is Luke over Leia initially.
It's interesting. You know, I'm just making these connections here. You know, Luke seems to be sort of the person that everyone sort of revolves around here in this movie. You know, when Luke's not there, people are, you know, fighting and, you know, threatening to leave, apparently, you know, and all this stuff. And then we get to The Force Awakens and Luke's gone again and, you know, everyone's split up again, you know.
Interesting. Luke's the glue.
Luke just shouldn't leave ever.
Yeah, Luke's the glue.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the Riley Blanton of the Star Wars Report. That's a good point,
Riley
though, Jason.
Would be very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah. Well, I hope he listens. But, you know, I think there's, you know, there is, there's that. That's a really great insight, Jason, that, you know, Luke's absence seems to cause a certain amount of upheaval. But as soon as Han is informed that Luke is missing, Han also knows that this is not the type of planet that you can just, like, not worry about. Like, oh, he's probably strolling somewhere, right? Like, if this was Naboo, he probably just, you know, he took a little swim with the Gungans. Like, he's fine. You know?
He'll turn up tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know, that sort of thing. No, not on Hoth.
Right.
It's life or death. Missing overnight and you'd never come back.
Yeah. So, you know, Han immediately springs into action, even though he is, you know, right on Chewie's case just a second ago about, like, put this shit back together. We're flying the heck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
When he hears Luke hasn't returned, he knows things are not going to be going well. So he immediately saddles up. Right. He wants to go out right away and take a speeder, of course, because that's safe. It's quicker. It's more efficient. It, you know, has tracking devices. But
they're not ready yet.
But they're not ready yet. You know, we've had some trouble adapting them to the cold. Well, luckily, no matter how long they've been there, luckily they're able to figure it out the next day.
Right.
But, you know, so Han immediately, he's impulsive. And Han just says, well, then I'm going to go out on Tauntaun, you know. And even though he's told that it's getting so darn cold out there that even the Tauntauns won't survive, which means that Han's not going to survive because a Tauntaun at least is native to the planet, unlike Han. He still is going to make, you know, he impulsively goes, you know, he doesn't even go back to tell Chewie. He doesn't tell, you know, Leia. He doesn't tell anybody except for this, you know, these random officers. And he just goes off to help his friend. And again, that's the change that we've seen in Han between A New Hope and Empire is, you know, it was obviously a pained decision to return at the end of A New Hope and, you know, kind of save the day so Luke can make the winning shot. But here it is. It's just, this is who Han is. He's got it. He has a loyalty to that friend of his, to mm-hmm. Luke. It's nothing about sticking around to help the rebellion. It's sticking around now to make sure his friend's okay. And he's not going to leave until his friend's okay. And so off he goes into the blistering cold.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to our show. we get to the Wampa's lair anyways. And this is where we find Luke hanging upside down. I always wondered how the Wampa got him up there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, he had to hold him up there until that froze, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, that's obviously just a cool set design or, scene design. There's no practical sense to it, but that's okay. It's a movie, people.
Oh, he's hanging Luke up in the meat larder, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on a meat hook.
Yep, exactly.
And some of the changes I love that they made in the special edition, though, getting to see the Wampa, the Wampa was awesome because it's such a cool creature. And you know, it's chowing down on Luke's Tauntaun.
Yeah.
And, as we all know,
Luke,
you know,
is dessert.
Right. As we all know, you know, that whole Wampa attack anyway is an early way in the film to, you know, make sense of the scars on Mark Hamill's face from the car accident he was in before filming the movie.
Right.
But you know, and this is a scene of very clear danger and it's kind of got that monster movie feeling to it, right? As Luke is that Wampa is about to get closer, the music, right? It starts to build, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's almost like Jaws, dude.
Almost, yeah.
You know, it kind of has a Jaws-esque feel to it as the Wampa is approaching, and this is the first time we see Luke use the Force, use the Force. I mean, yeah, we got that hint of it in A New Hope, you know, when he deflects the shots from the Seeker droid, and then obviously he uses it to destroy the Death Star, but... In this film, we see him do something new. We see him pull the lightsaber to his hand, and it's a very
laborious process.
Yeah, it's a very difficult process for Luke. But it's really neat, right? It shows that he's still relying on his everyday worldly experience of like, well, I got to get my lightsaber. I'm just going to reach for it. I'm going to keep reaching. And it's like, nope, that's just not going to happen. That's impossible. It's out of reach. Well... Mm-hmm. The Force makes the impossible possible. And Luke, like you said, laboriously pulls it to his hand in the nick of time. And again, you know, it's again, it's that monster movie effect of the Wampanoag's charging in, and Luke just takes one slash and literally disarms it. We got to have a good disarming.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you hear the lightsaber deactivate as he runs out the cave tunnel, but you still see it out.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I mean, that was something they put in the special edition, because then when he's rolling out of it, it's deactivated. It's like, okay, we get that he deactivated. You don't need to put the sound in.
Well, or you could have just put the sound in, you know, as he's running around the corner rather than right there.
Right.
Anyway.
So, yeah, that's... So Luke is, and again, and you get these great shots then of, you know, it just kind of pans away to show Luke lost in a barren wasteland of snow in the middle of a blizzard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, this is, you know, David Collins pointed out at that panel we went to where they, you know, they've pulled out some of the music here. There was music that kind of implied, you know, the searching that Han is going on and right. The wandering of Luke, but they choose to take that out. And again, he kind of, you know, David Collins implied this, and I think he's absolutely right. Not that he needs my approval, good Lord, Carl. But, you know, he, when we got to watch that on screen, right, like when he actually showed it, because you do hear, like, he's done that in, you know, some of the Oxygen episodes. It's another thing to actually see it, though. When you're watching that with the music, it's fun, it's good, it's great music. But when you see it without it, again, all you hear is the howling wind. You know, it's just, it gives you that sense of the biting cold that Luke is experiencing. And makes it far more...
hopeless.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, Han's still not having much luck finding Luke. R2's not having any luck at all. And, of course, we get a bunch of these shots where, you know, Mark Hamill's running around in the snow, you know, and Irvin Kershner and the crew are sitting in, you know, in the back door of a hotel filming him, right. You know, with their coffee and the heat and everything. I just think it's funny that that's how that all went down.
I know it. You know, and you're just going to get those intercut scenes of Han looking and... Luke stumbling.
Yeah.
And things finally change around when the apparition of Obi-Wan Kenobi shows up. And...
Before Obi-Wan shows up, we do get the blast doors closing at the Rebel base. Oh,
good point. Thank you. Sorry, I almost skipped that.
They have to close the shield doors because it's just getting way too cold. And Leia and 3PO and R2 and Chewie are all there. None of them like what's going on. Leia's obviously very concerned, but doesn't voice any of it, unlike Chewie.
Right.
Who howls in despair, basically, and is, you know, if it hits you quite, you know, if it hits you right, you know, chill-inducing.
Yeah. Chewie is, for the first time in this film, and it's not going to be the only time, he's helpless.
Right.
You know, he is, there's nothing he can do to help the man he has a life debt to. Right. And that definitely causes a scream of agony, in a sense, from Chewie.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into finally getting some hope because Obi-Wan shows up and gives Luke further instructions to go to Dagobah to learn from Yoda. And again, we could do a whole episode just on the idea of why did it take Obi-Wan so long to contact Luke, right? Like, why hasn't he been in communication with Luke all along? It almost seems, again, it seems to imply that, you know, Luke obviously heard him during the Battle of Yavin, but hasn't heard from him, let alone ever seen him since. Mm-hmm. And there's a good chance that Luke probably just thinks he's hallucinating.
Right. He's on the verge of death, gets this strange mission to go to a planet he's never heard of, to look for a Jedi he's never heard of. From a ghostly apparition who he's not even quite sure is there. And, I'd question my sanity too at that point.
Yeah. And,
but thankfully as Obi-Wan fades back into the Force, Han comes racing to the rescue.
Yeah. And when I was a kid, I always assumed, and again, even though we don't see it or told this, I always just assumed Obi-Wan kind of guided Han there. Not like Han knew it. Han didn't watch Obi-Wan or see Obi-Wan, and he certainly didn't see Obi-Wan fade into the Force. But I just, to me, it was just like, okay, Obi-Wan kind of inadvertently guided Han there. Like, Obi-Wan shows up to make sure Luke has his next instruction, keep him going, and then kind of just subtly points Han in the right direction. Now, again, that's just something I've always... That was just something I made up for myself to make more sense of those events. But whether or not that's the case, you know, obviously we're not told.
Right. No, I would agree, though, you know, that it wouldn't surprise me if Obi-Wan had something to do with Han showing up, and especially the timing, you know, the timing of it all makes you think that there's something else going on than just Han being at the right place at the right time. So,
yeah,
it would make sense if Obi-Wan had some sort of influence on that.
Right.
Especially after he gives him this mission to go find Yoda.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and of course, we get the great, you know, scene where Han and the lightsaber and the tauntaun, and I thought they smelled bad on the outside, you know.
Yeah, Han using a lightsaber, which is great. I love that. I don't like it in the comic where everybody uses one because it cheapens it. But I like when Han, like, again, and the reason I like that Han uses it is because it says something about the type of character Han is. It shows how industrious he is. He knows what he has to do. He's like, okay, it's going to be freezing out here. I've got to put up a shelter. But if I just leave Luke laying here in the freezing snow, he's going to freeze to death. So immediately realizes, okay, Tauntaun's dead. It's warm in there.
Yeah.
He finds Luke's lightsaber, cuts open the Tauntaun, just shoves Luke in. That's why I've always liked that scene, is because I'm a Han Solo fan. It just shows how industrious and quick thinking Han Solo is. He's thinking on his feet. And if it weren't for Han, Luke would have never survived. You know,
right.
So for once, Han Solo's the savior, not R2-D2. So then, of course, the next morning, you know, we get, I really like that music, by the way, is
we get it as they escape Cloud City too. It's probably my favorite music cue from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's really good. And here we go. Let's listen to this. Whoops.
Echo Base. I've got something. Not much, but it could be a life form. Commander Skywalker, do you copy?
Sorry.
Just like the urgency of it all.
Yeah, it's so... It is. There is. It's John Williams being John Williams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
amazing.
It's so great. And then I love just... Yeah, it's the sense of humor of Han, you know. Good morning. Nice see you guys to drop by. And
right.
Oh my gosh, I can never remember that character's name. Who is Rogue Two?
Zev Seneska, right. I believe is his
Zev,
name.
Zev, yeah. You know, he just cracks that smile like he knows Han. He knows the type of person Han is. He just cracks that smile, you know. Echo Base, this is Rogue Two. I found them. Repeat, I found them. And the music gets kind of happy and light, and it's finally all this discord that we've been experiencing, you know, between all our characters and all this, you know, all the danger that they've been in these last few minutes. Finally, we can breathe. A sigh of relief. And, you know, then we cut to, you know, Luke inside
Luke in a diaper.
And Luke in a diaper, taking a poop in a back tank. You know, but it's the first time where we see all of our characters together, you know, and they're all, you know, they're all standing at that window watching Luke. And there's obviously, you know, we can't see their faces because we're behind them, but we know that they're all concerned.
Right.
You know, Han's, you know, the way he's walking around, he's got his Han swagger on. But, you know, we know he's concerned. Chewie's concerned. The droids are concerned. Leia's certainly concerned.
Leia's basically stock still staring at that, you know.
Right. And then Luke comes too, and he's probably, like, you know, embarrassed out of his mind. Well, they're watching me in a diaper. Great.
Lovely.
But, you know, then we get this next great scene of witty banter again. You know,
that's great.
And we learned that basically the base is on lockdown at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's been grounded. There's no ships allowed out. And Han's interpretation of that is Leia called those shots so that she could keep him specifically around and keep him from leaving. And
everything that Leia does revolves around Han, you know.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's almost... Do you mind if I just play this scene real quick?
Sure.
It's so funny. All right, here we go.
How you feeling, kid? Don't look so bad to me. And he looks strong enough to pull the ears off a gun dart.
Thanks to you.
That's two you owe me, Junior. Well, your worship, looks like you managed to keep me around for a little while longer.
I had nothing to do with it. General Rykin thinks it's dangerous for any ships to leave the system until we've activated the energy field.
That's a good story. I think you just can't bear to let a gorgeous guy like me out of your sight.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
Laugh it up, fuzzball. But you didn't see us alone in the South Passage. She expressed her true feelings for me.
What? Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
Who's scruffy looking?
Okay, sorry. Thank you for letting me play that.
And nothing else really needs to be said.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right?
After you played it. You know, it's just... We get that. And Leia, you know, tries to get back at Han by planning a big one on Luke.
Her brother?
Yeah, well, they don't know that.
Incest? Sorry, I'm being harsh. But yeah, no. And I like it because Han is, again, it's his bloated ego. He really does think, you know, she's got a thing for me. And I think, you know, must have hit pretty close to the mark to get her all riled up like that. You know, the fact that she does, she gets so ticked off. She gets so annoyed by this because he has hit close to home, right? Like the things that tend to piss us off the most are the things that, you know, they shine some truth on us that we don't want shined on us.
Right.
You know, when somebody, you know, says something about you that you don't like about yourself, you get really mad and you're like, that's not true, but you know it is. And that's kind of what's happening with Leia here is, you know, she's like, oh, how dare you know that about me?
Yeah.
And her revenge is to plant one on Luke because, again, there is that deleted scene. You get some of this in the radio drama as well, but there's that deleted scene in Empire where it's just Luke and Leia in the medical bay. And there is kind of that romantic connection still carried over from A New Hope. You know, to kind of imply that love triangle that mm-hmm. never really comes to fruition in the movie. You know, given the cut of the movie that we have, Leia's kiss isn't so much about affection for Luke as it is a way of punching Han in the gut.
Right. Exactly.
And the best thing about that kiss is 3PO's reaction. The way he just kind of like hustles right up to it. And you just hear like the, you know, as he, you know, he looks back and forth between, you know, Leia and Han just to see Han will react. And Han just stands there, you know, grudgingly with his arms crossed.
Oh, it's great. 3PO is so great with that moment. He just rushes forward to see exactly what's going on. And oh my. And then of course, Chewie says something smart alecky afterwards. Han just glares at him. Everybody is summoned to go see General Rykin.
Because something's going on.
And here we are, you know, 17, 18 minutes into this movie, and we're finally getting focused back to the Empire, which is what the first thing we saw in this movie. You know, hey, Empire's out there, probe droid, we got to take care of it. And Han and Chewie decide to take care of some droid business.
Yeah, I would have loved seen Han and Chewie in a snowspeeder together, though. I wonder if Chewie was in the back. My guess is he was. Han probably was the pilot.
I don't think Chewie would fit in a snowspeeder.
You don't think so?
No, I think Chewie's too tall.
Oh, I assumed they went out on snowspeeder.
I mean, the probe droid's not too far away. You know, he's
that's true.
They sitting out there the by the shield generator.
Yeah. It's one of the few times you see Han use his gun in the movie. It's actually one of two times. It's there and then when he shoots at Vader.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he blows it up and immediately reports in, I've got a good bet the Empire knows we're here. And then it's finally the new Imperial March and, you know, all these great shots of these huge Star Destroyers, which we know to be huge from A New Hope, being overshadowed by something, and then all of a sudden we get that great shot of the Executor.
Right.
And finally Vader. That's 20 minutes into the movie, and we finally see Vader.
Right.
And what is he doing? He's searching the stars. If you think about it, I mean, like, quite literally, he's obsessed with finding something. So he's even standing at the, you know, just staring out into the blackness of space, looking.
Right.
We get to meet my favorite Imperial officer, who's just a captain right now, Captain Piet.
Admiral Ozzel.
And Admiral Ozzel is just, he's kind of your by-the-book Imperial who just seems to, he's kind of borderline lazy. I don't know if it's lazy or so much as he just, I guess it's not laziness. I don't think he likes being questioned by someone he obviously is a superior to.
Right.
No, so, Piet's like, hey,
I think that's definitely it. His ego is more important to him than anything else.
Right. So when this captain says, I think we've got something here, sir, and he immediately dismisses it. We've got thousands of probe droids searching the galaxy.
I want proofs, not leads.
And then Vader strolls up, and he immediately, that's it, the rebels are there. And Ozzel's trying to, reason with him. My lord, there's so many uncharted settlements. It could be smugglers. It could be, that's the system, and I'm sure Skywalker is, right? Like, he wants Skywalker. So, right. And then you've got that awkward shot of him reeling around and
yelling General in Veers' face.
Yeah, poor Veers.
Prepare your men.
Yeah, and then there's that great shot of Ozzel just stepping forward, like right in Piet's face, and just giving him the death stare. How dare you?
Because Piet came off as incredibly confident or competent, and made Ozzel look like a fool.
Yep. So,
which Ozzel, he is
right. Ozzel's not having that, and it's interesting because you don't get the. I don't get the sense that Piet's trying to make him look like a fool. He's just doing his duty. Piet he's just trying to be a good Imperial officer, and he's doing his duty, and Ozzel just gets pissed off about it.
Oh, yeah. And apparently we're going to see, some Imperial political maneuvering in the upcoming Rogue One movie. So it'll be nice to see, some of that at play.
Yeah, absolutely.
We cut back
to the planet, and we see them getting ready. Because even in the scene right before, when Han says there's a good bet, we know that the Empire knows we're here. Riken's immediate response: we better prepare the evacuation. Like, they're not sticking around.
Uh-uh.
It seems like right now they're still kind of on the run. They're still trying to consolidate their forces before they're ready to move forward and make their next move. So if the Empire is going to roll up on them, we've got to get out of here because we've got to survive this. So this battle now becomes a battle of survival.
Which really sucks because they just got settled.
Right. Yeah. I mean, literally, yeah. I mean, that's a good point. They just were able to, get the speeders, ready for cold weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now now they're off again. And again, it just shows the breadth and the wherewithal and the means by which the Empire has to track this force down. There's no hiding. I forgot to mention this when we did the opening crawl, but we're told right off the bat too that the rebels have been driven from their base on Yavin. So obviously probably the Imperial fleet rolled up on them because they know where they were at that point and obviously defeated them in the battle, a second battle of Yavin, pushed them off, and almost can imply that for the last almost 3 years, it's been a cat and mouse game. There probably hasn't been any really big pitched battles per se.
Right.
But now it's finally coming down to it, and it's just interesting that like the rebels go into this knowing they can't win, but they know they just need to fight a battle of survival. They need to hold out to let the majority of the force, get off to this rendezvous point and just hold them at bay. That's their only objective. It's not a victory. It's just survival. Which is a very different type of battle.
It is. It is. And I like how you put it. It's purely survival. This is the survival of the whole, survival of the ideals, survival for the greater good, basically. And everybody's getting ready. Luke probably should still be on bed rest, but he's getting, suited up to take a snow speeder out. Han's trying to get the Falcon fixed so he can get off planet when everyone else is evacuating and it's not going well.
yeah.
So
when we get, you know, again, we get character drama at that point when Han and Luke see each other. It's the last time they see each other in the film.
It is.
They're not going to see each other again until Jabba's palace.
Right. We're going to be, what, 23 minutes into this movie?
Yeah.
And that's the last time they see each other.
Right. Yeah.
And they don't say much.
And they don't. You know, be careful. You too. What's easily showcased in that very short little exchange is the amount of care that these characters have for each other. You know, when Luke goes to walk away, at first Chewie grabs him and, you know, hugs him from behind really tight. Okay. Right? Like, right. Chewie really loves Luke. And Han's concerned for him, very different, right? Like, the last time they were kind of in this situation where Luke's all geared up and ready to go into combat, Han was trying to talk him out of it, you know, at Yavin. You know, mm-hmm. Why don't you come with us? We could use you. And Luke is trying to convince him. What's interesting here is neither of them is doing any convincing. Han knows what Luke is now.
Right.
And respects that. And respects that Luke is obviously going to go out and do battle here. I think he also respects the fact that Luke is capable of doing it and surviving. And Luke's not going to be like, well, why don't you come out and jump in a snowspeeder and help? Because he understands this still isn't Han's fight.
Right. Not yet, anyway.
At least not yet, right. And, it just shows a great, you know, great acting here between Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford. Just the way they exchange those looks, you see that they're both concerned for each other.
Yeah.
And it's foreshadowing, you know, you too. And then it zooms in on Han very closely. Like, yeah, Han is actually the one more at risk, which we'll come to find out.
Yeah. Scenes like this make me sad that Luke and Han never got to see each other in the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, borderline pisses me off, I'll be honest. I mean, because that is a great scene in Force Awakens when he's like, yeah, I knew Luke. And the music, you know, it's that beautiful hint of the Force theme. And the look on, you know, on Han's face is one of, like, clearly loss and he's missing Luke. But to not get to see them on screen together just really sucks.
it grinds my gears.
Yeah. It puts a gizmo into my servo motors. sorry. finally we're ready to go. Let's kick this battle off, you know.
Yes.
This huge battle.
Admiral Ozzel has brought the fleet, you know, out too close to the system, and the energy shield is up and all this fun stuff. He felt surprised, was wiser. He's as clumsy as he is stupid.
Well, I think the reason that this is such a big mistake is because, right, they were probably planning to do an orbital bombardment. You know, it's an easy way to flush them out and win the day, keep them on the planet under a bombardment. But nope, Ozzel's an idiot. He tried to surprise them, but it kind of failed. And now they've got their energy shield up.
Yep. And that's not going to work. So now we have to do a surface attack, which is going to cost manpower and, you know, equipment and all this fun stuff. And it's going to be a much tougher fight. And Ozzel's dead, and Piet makes the rather rapid ascension through the ranks from captain to admiral.
Yep. Much to his terror.
Right. Exactly. Considering the fact that the previous admiral is collapsing to the floor because he's being strangled to death by the Force, you know, from quite some distance over the Skype phone.
Right. Exactly. Vader can Skype Force choke.
Yes.
That's worth mentioning too quick about Vader. Again, that's just in a very subtle way showcasing how powerful he is. You know, we've seen him Force choke Admiral Mahdi in A New Hope, but he did it right in front of us, right? Like, we saw that happen. It was right there in front of you. But here he is doing it over Skype. And, you know, love that we refer to it as Skype. The Executor is a huge ship. Now, granted, Vader's meditation chamber probably isn't that far from the bridge.
Right.
But it's a massive ship, and they're probably not that close. And Vader's able to just do that over that. And we don't even see if his hands are doing anything. We just see his mask the whole time, expressionless and deadly.
Right.
And Piet is, you know, he's probably terrified. He, you know, this is great. Well, this is great. Thank you, Lord Vader. You know, here's a great promotion, but I'm going to be the next one on that floor dead next to him when I screw, if I screw up.
Right.
And we're going to see that fear on his face throughout much of this movie.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But then we cut back to the base and we see Leia giving the instructions to some of the pilots. Again, mm-hmm. showcasing to us that she is now full on in the military, right? Like in A New Hope, she's a senator. She's a leader in the Rebel Alliance. She's not necessarily a military leader, though. And it seems, you know, we can seem to pull from Empire, though, that she is definitely a general in a sense, right? Like what she becomes mm-hmm. in Force Awakens. And she's wearing clearly some sort of insignia on her vest there. So she's part of the military now. You know, these troops aren't going to gather around a senator to listen to battle plans. She's obviously part of the military at this point. And, yeah. you know, she's telling them how the plan is going to go down and, you know, two fighters against a Star Destroyer.
We'll get the ion cannon to help clear your path. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have any better options.
Absolutely.
You know, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I can really say is good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get the tense prep. Is it all the soldiers are setting up before we finally see the battle go down. It's the calm before the storm. The ships try and take off. They disable a Star Destroyer on the way up with the ion cannon, allowing them to get through. Things are starting off well for the rebels here.
Yes. Yes, and that's true. You know, they score the first victory in a sense. They get their mm-hmm. the first transport is away. Cheers! Yay!
Yeah.
But again, almost then, you know, we go back out to the exterior shots of them, you know, prepping the base and getting ready for the oncoming onslaught. And you get that those tense moments of building drama, and then you see them zoom in on these AT-AT walkers.
Yeah.
And the battle's ready to go. And as soon as they start opening fire, I mean, immediately things start falling apart, even though they have these strong, you know, they're entrenched, you know, trenched warfare is the easiest type to fight. You know, when you've got an enemy walking over open ground at you and you're entrenched, you should be able to win that, except not against AT-ATs, you know.
Yeah.
They're extremely powerful. And every time they blast something, I mean, it causes a lot of damage. But then you got I think it's one of the coolest action shots in Star Wars is the shot of the, you know, Rogue Squadron flying over the trenches, flying into the maelstrom, right? Like they're going to fly into this head on, and I love that Luke's leading that pack, you know. Even though these things are powerful as heck, Luke's going to take Rogue Squadron right at them. And it quickly becomes apparent that those blasters are useless.
Yeah. All the blasters, every weapon that the rebels have is just not going to cut it against these AT-ATs. You know, the ground guns won't do anything. The ion cannon might, but that's too busy trying to get, you know, help keep the path clear for the rebel transports. Snow speeders don't have the firepower.
Yeah. And I also remember, and a lot of times I do these in the radio dramas where they make sense of something that maybe people didn't understand when the film first came out. And they actually make a mention of that in the radio drama about using the ion cannon on the AT-ATs, but they say that they can't angle the cannon down low enough to shoot at them effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, yeah, they can't even use that. So now we get to see Luke be kind of like Han, thinking on his feet. You know, rogue group, use your tow cables.
Harpoons and tow cables. Yeah,
go for the legs. Right? So we've got Luke now thinking on his feet. And, you know, the first one to score that victory, of course, is everyone's favorite pilot after potentially Poe Dameron, Wedge.
Wedge Antilles.
You know?
He's my favorite.
Wah! That got him.
Wedge and Jansen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And... you know, that tactic seems to work. But be that as it may, obviously, this is still all a delaying tactic. Those AT-ATs are still pushing forward inch by inch. We even see an AT-ST moving forward in one of the shots.
It's a fighting retreat, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Command staff is starting to, you know, evacuate. Han and Chewie are still frantically screwing things back together on the Falcon. Oh, this one goes there, that one goes there.
all that fun stuff. And even R2 and 3PO are getting split up, because R2's going with Luke in his X-Wing for when Luke gets back, and 3PO has to go with Princess Leia.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. The movie starts kind of in conflict. We get a nice little resolution. Everybody's back together. And now the Empire shows up and breaks that all up again.
Yep. Splits everybody up.
Yeah. So, you know, Luke gets shot down. Once Luke gets shot down, we can assume Rogue Squadron's not going to be in a good place without its leader. Right. And debatably the best pilot, although I think still Wedge is probably... That's a matchup we should do sometime, Jason. Episode 5, Luke versus Wedge. You know, apparently they think Luke's the better pilot, or else they wouldn't have given him command of Rogue Squadron. But yeah. Be that as it may, Luke gets shot down. And then we cut into the interior of Echo Base, where Han is... He's coming back in. He's coming into the maelstrom now. You know, he's flying into the danger zone on foot to try to make sure Leia's okay. He makes it apparent through that action how he feels about Leia. He obviously cares for her. He wants to make sure she gets out. But of course, she's still in that command center, even though everything has fallen apart. Riken's not even there.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know.
And Han's like, no, you're getting out now, because if I don't get you out now, you won't leave. You know, basically is the idea that you get, is that, you know, Leia will stay there till everyone else is out before she even thinks about leaving. And Han's like, no, you have to survive this, sweetheart.
Yeah. yeah.
So he's going to get her out.
Right. And they'll bring 3PO along with them as well.
Right, right. Because, you know, Goldenrod, you know, can't leave Goldenrod. Although I'm sure Han wishes that he had.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get these great shots of the soldiers retreating with some awesome music. You know, they're clearly on the run now. This battle's over.
Yeah.
But we get one last little victory with Luke, you know, blowing up an AT-AT.
Yes.
He's still fighting, even though he's on the ground against this AT-AT. You know, it shows just kind of the wherewithal of that character.
Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, too little too late. And General Veers is his squad of walkers is on the march and unstoppable.
Yep. And, you know, Han is trying to get Leia out of there. Their way gets blocked to the transport, and Han's just going to, he says, you know, I'm going to get her out of here on the Falcon.
Yeah.
Or as he calls it, the Falcon.
The Falcon.
so now they start running back the other way. 3PO is kind of he's the levity in the moment, and if you will, like, wait.
Yes.
And, you know, like, where are we going? Wait for me. And immediately see now, you know, we hear that, you know, Imperial troops have entered the base. And then we see who else has entered the base.
Vader's. Yeah, it's not just the Imperial troops. It's Vader.
Vader's here now. And he is pursuing them on foot. And we get to the Falcon. And they fire it up. Han has to, you know, whack it real good like an old car. Fire it back up again. And these stormtroopers are out there gunning for him, setting up a big cannon. Again, I love this, though, like that the Falcon has like these hidden gun emplacements. You know, of course Han would have like illegal guns.
Of course he would.
And opens fire, you know, to keep those stormtroopers at bay. And then they blast out of there with Vader watching.
Yeah.
And
Vader can do nothing but glower, basically, at the Falcon as it takes off just ahead of his arrival.
And there's this, there's a great shot there of, I always liked it, where Vader's watching them fly off. And then you see a few snowtroopers running back kind of behind Vader. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but they're running the opposite way of the Falcon. And to me, my implication is they're thinking, oh, crap, we didn't do it. So they're like getting the heck out of there before Vader can get pissed. I don't think that's really what's happening, but that's just my way of looking at it. And I think, again, we get a very important setup shot where we get to see Luke see the Falcon leave. So Luke at least feels like, okay, great, they got out of here. My friends are going to be okay. You know, he doesn't realize what they're about to... is going to happen. But, you know, again, when they blast off, they think they're probably sighing with relief, like, oh God, we got out of there. And Vader was out there too. We got away. But the chase has just begun.
Yeah.
But, you know, Luke is going to take up with his X-Wing and, he has this, you know, conversation with R2 where it implies like R2 saying, where are you going? You don't have the right coordinates set. And Luke's, you know, says, well, we're going to go to the Dagobah system. So finally, Luke is addressing that call from Obi-Wan, which, mm-hmm. you know, hasn't been talked about because why would you? You didn't have time to even acknowledge it. So now that Luke is, he assumes everybody is safely away. The Alliance is going to, you know, continue. I did my part for now. Now it's time for me to go do the, you know, something even bigger. And he makes, you know, makes off for Dagobah. And yeah. you get that great line. You know, I like to keep it on manual control for a while.
Right. I was about to bring that up because I feel like R2 might accidentally, you know, reset his coordinates and take him back to the Alliance.
But alas, he's able to blast off to Dagobah. But we immediately go back to the Falcon, which does not seem to have as easy of a way out. Again, why it's so easy for Luke and so difficult for the Falcon, I think the biggest difference is, you know, the fleet isn't going to be concerned with a stray X-Wing here and there. Mm-hmm. Vader has probably, you know, called up to the Executor and the fleet and said, key in on the Millennium Falcon, get that ship.
You right. know?
So they are in hot pursuit by the Imperial fleet. And you get the asteroid field chase, which is one of the coolest chase scenes in Star Wars, if not movies in general.
Yeah, it's pretty darn cool. Of course, they can't jump to hyperspace. You know, 3PO kept trying to tell them, but nobody was listening. but, you know, because it's damaged and, you know, it's impossible to go to hyperspace right now. So they have to run and hide in this asteroid field. Escape from the TIE fighters chasing them, and we get, you know, of course, the great line about, you know, successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1. Never tell me the odds, you know. And we get to see Han's expert piloting skills at work.
Yep. And again, Han Solo's thinking on his feet. Well, if our, you know, and obviously that broken hyperdrive is a pretty important plot piece too, you know, because they can't just get out of there. I still love that. My favorite part of the asteroid field chase is actually right before they get into the asteroids, and you just that cool shot of like the Falcon just banking down in between all those Star Destroyers and almost causing them to collide. that's such a great shot. Han takes them into the asteroid field because it's kind of the only thing to do. If we don't go in here, we can't outrun them in open space without a hyperdrive. Right. So it's die, be captured, or try our luck in here. And
I like how Leia's like, you don't have to do this to impress me.
Yeah. You said you wanted to be around when I made a mistake. Well, this could be it, sweetheart.
I take it back.
Yeah. You know, so again, there's, and it's just such a cool scene, you know, and you see how great of a pilot Han is. And I don't care what people say, Han is a better pilot than Poe Dameron and Wedge combined. I don't think Wedge or Poe could have done that.
Sure they would all look up to him too. So
yeah, not with a freighter, at least that's the difference.
That is true. Cause we're talking freighters and starfighters here. Yeah. Apples and oranges.
Exactly. So you're right. You know, Han is going to safely get them through this asteroid field, finds a place to hide, and we can finally breathe and end Act One.
Yes.
Good Lord.
It's been a busy Act One.
It has been. This is what makes Empire so great is we've had so much great character drama, and we've also had a lot of great, you know, just good versus evil drama that we had from A New Hope. Mm-hmm. So it really is. Empire is really just taking this story to the next level and the next depth, which is so awesome. Why I love this movie.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's a pretty good one. You know, it's not my favorite of the Star Wars movies, as everyone is well aware of. But the fact that it is Star Wars automatically counts it as one of my favorite movies of all time, period, anyway. So
for sure. It's obviously my favorite movie of all time. So
very nice.
So anyway, that's where we're ending Act One of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes. And I look forward to seeing, you know, where we go from here. Obviously, there'll be a lot of stuff to talk about in terms of Empire Strikes Back. But it'll be a while before we get back to Empire.
Right. And when we get to Act Two of these movies, there's always so much that happens in Act 2 of every Star Wars film. That's where the meat of the stories always takes place. Because if you think about it,
yeah,
you know, you're just looking at like a story plot line, you know, right? We have the like the introduction beginning, up middle. To you know, yeah, the beginning, middle, and end. But if you know like that triangular chart for like literature, you know, you have mm-hmm. the introduction and then the inciting incident and then the rising action, the climax, and the falling action. You know, all the big rising action stuff is always in Act 2 for all these films. So,
right,
boy, those are going to be long episodes.
Those are. We're gonna have to find some way to like
shorten them. Just
shorten it.
And, yeah,
you know, just get the only what's necessary out of those.
So. Exactly. So, but yeah, no. So, we're just probably won't get back to one of these till early August, maybe late July, but we will get our next one is Act 1 of Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
Which is mostly fighting. That won't take as much time to talk about.
Right. Right. And I'm not sure Act 1 of Revenge of the Sith is too terribly long either. We'll have to see.
Not. Act 2 of Revenge of the Sith is crazy long.
Yeah. We may hit one or two scenes from Act 2, slip them into Act 1 just to have a little bit more to talk about and get a little bit farther through the movie. We'll figure that out though before we record the episode, obviously.
Right. But before we wrap this up, Jason,
mm-hmm.
we have a poll for everybody to participate yes. in. Hopefully most of you will be able to help out with this.
Okay. Well, it's more of a survey than a poll.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
but Carl wants to know, what was the first Star Wars movie you ever saw? So this isn't going to be like,
there's no debating this. Yeah, it's not a favorite or anything.
There's no winning this. It's just like we're curious. We want to know, sort of get to know our audience at large. You know, what was the first Star Wars movie you saw? Obviously, for Carl, it was Empire, right?
Right. And so far, everybody I've talked to on Tales of the Larians, it's been Empire.
Yes. Well,
I'm curious.
For me, it was A New Hope.
Interesting.
Yeah. 1997 special editions.
Nice. So, but anyway, we are definitely interested what you all saw first. So definitely be sure to let us know.
Exactly. So, and if they want to weigh in on our survey or anything else that we talked about this episode, where can they do that, Carl?
Well, certainly over on Facebook. Facebook.com/Wampa's Lair Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Wampa's Lair, or shoot us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Indeed. And is there anything else that you want to say before we wrap up this episode?
I'm all set.
All right. Well, never tell me the odds of us completing an episode like this, but we are. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 188, The Empire Strikes Back, Act 1. For Carl LeClaire, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.